I'm Alex Wise.
Here's a scientific conclusion that even a professional science denier would accept. Being stuck in line, on an airplane, in a waiting room, or anywhere else with someone loudly nattering inanities into their cell phone is somewhere between irritating and infuriating. You don't really need a PhD in human psychology to come to this conclusion, but it turns out that quite a few scientists have been conducting research on the obvious, probing the whys behind the annoyance of cell phone chattering. A new study out of San Diego University concludes that two factors are at play here. One is simply the trapped response. You're stuck in a place with this cackling conversation assaulting you, so your stress level quickly builds to a boil. The other is what scientists are calling the half-a-log factor. Unlike hearing two people carry on a conversation, we hear cell phoners yakking with someone who's not there, so we're getting only half of what's being said. Psychologists say that this hijacks an innocent bystander's brain, which can't help but search for some logic in what it's receiving. Thus, our gray cells involuntarily struggle to put the half-a-log into a dialogue, distracting us from our own thoughts or disrupting a simple moment of solitude. Another study found that the brain perceives the one-sided conversation to be abnormally loud, even when it's not. This not only drives us to distraction, but also to a simmering fury, ultimately chauffeuring us right up to the dark precipice of antisocial behavior. This is Jim Hightower saying, as one who's been brought to that edge several times, it seems to me that the people prattling on so rudely are the antisocial ones. I appreciate the recent scientific attention to this uncouth narcissism, but wouldn't it be better to address it at the kindergarten level?
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
Nonhuman Radio is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Payroll Plus, payroll and human resource experts for any size business. Owner Dolly Wendell and her staff can solve your payroll, workers' comp, group health insurance, employee benefits, and human resource management needs. In these changing times of employee compliance and tax laws, professional assistance is a must. To reach Dolly at Payroll Plus, call 566-0452 and set your mind at ease. And by Smith Center for Heart and Vascular Health. Dr. Smith and the team are experts in primary care and prevention of cardiovascular health issues. Understand that prevention is the key to good health and longevity. Board certified in internal medicine and specializing in high blood pressure, diabetes, and chronic illnesses, they offer a comprehensive program getting you to your peak of wellness. More information by calling the Smith Center at 592-3484 and at cardiovascularphysicianinchicoca.com. Welcome to Nonhuman Radio, where we talk animal rights and veganism every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. here on KZFR 90.1 FM or online at kzfr.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Nonhuman Radio. I'm Jeannie Trezino. My co-host, Robert Jones, is away for the next couple of weeks, so I'm again pleased to have Toby Benedetto co-hosting. Toby is an amazing local and national animal rights activist, and it's always a pleasure to have her in the studio. You may remember her from the KZFR Pledge Drive and the show we did in honor of Prince. Thanks again to our listeners who called in to support Nonhuman Radio and KZFR during the Pledge Drive. We are grateful for your help. So, welcome, Toby, and thank you for filling in.
Thanks for having me again, Jeannie. I feel like a little bit of a veteran now, and I'm looking forward to tonight's show.
Great. What do we have coming up for today's show, Toby?
Well, tonight on Non-Human Radio, we'll talk about bison and the National Park Service, the horse racing industry. We have a listener email and my vegan pick of the week.
Awesome.
All of that coming up, plus the vegan calendar events. So over to you, Jeannie.
Thanks. Today, we're taking a quick look at a cute animal story that took a dark turn last week involving bison, which, by the way, were declared the official national mammal last month, similar then in stature to the bald eagle. At Yellowstone National Park, rangers announced that a bison calf who had been put in the back of a van by well-intentioned tourists who thought he looked cold and were in danger of dying had to be euthanized. Park rangers had tried repeatedly to reunite the young bison calf with the herd, but the efforts failed. According to the National Park Service, the abandoned calf was causing a dangerous situation by continually approaching people and cars along the park highway. This incident raises so many issues involving animals, humans, and public policy governing these interactions. The story makes me so sad, Toby. Had you heard about this news story? Did you see it on your social media feed?
I did. And it's such a good reminder to all of us to, when we're in these kinds of situations, remember that it's wildlife and we're kind of in their territory in these situations and to sort of let things be.
It's an interesting situation, and just in terms of social media, that story went viral twice. Once when the supposed rescue happened, when these tourists put the calf in the back seat of their minivan, and then it went super viral when the National Park Service announced that the calf had to be euthanized. Yeah, you're right. In general, park visitors should leave wildlife alone. We are so far separated from nature and wildness as humans and in an urban environment that we really don't have the tools to properly respond to these kinds of situations. And generally, sadly, we make things worse. And I think it's important to remember that we have a group of trained professionals and volunteers who specialize in helping distressed wildlife. And these people are called wildlife rehabilitators. So, yeah, and it's just interesting because at Yellowstone, the visitor areas give you the sense of being in wilderness, but in fact, you're not in actual wilderness because you're in a highway that's running through the middle of a rather remote area, but still, you're on a highway. And so the function of that highway ends up being like driving through a petting zoo. Or having the appearance of a petting zoo. These animals are minding their own business. They don't look aggressive towards humans. But sometimes humans get injured, and sometimes humans injure the wildlife.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think another point to take from this incident is that at Yellowstone, there's a bison culling program that's been going on since around 1985. The slaughter is part of an agreement signed by both the federal government and the state of Montana to limit bison populations to a set number just before the spring calving season. Some approved hunting goes on, but a significant tool for population control is a bison roundup, where bison herds are chased into corrals and then, sadly, sent to slaughterhouses. This is because ranchers in Montana don't want the bison grazing on their pastures and have concerns about the animals carrying brucellosis to their cattle.
Yeah, and for those of you who don't know, brucellosis is a cattle disease, and it threatens ranchers' livelihood because it can induce abortions in pregnant cows. So they want to avoid having their herds infected with that.
Well, animal activists with the Buffalo Field Campaign have been protesting these culls for decades now, and public support has been growing for more compassionate wildlife management, or actually more appropriately, compassionate human management, since a big part of the problem here is that humans and ranchers and wildlife are all competing to use that same space. The Yellowstone bison herds represent one of the greatest species recovery stories in history. A population of 23 that were recovered during the past 100 years has actually increased to approximately 4,500 today, which makes them the largest population of wild bison in the world.
Yeah, it's an amazing recovery. The reason why there were only 23 bison at around the turn of the century is that during the 19th century, in the 1800s, settlers and the U.S. Army had a campaign to slaughter these millions of bison that ranged all across the Great Plains. The bison are a migratory species, so they migrate north and south and up elevation and down elevation. So there had been millions of these bison that were ranging across the plains and the prairies, and they were slaughtered and replaced with cows and farms in what was essentially a gift to the cattle industry, similar to what we see today going on. Another undeniably sinister political benefit was that the wholesale buffalo slaughter destroyed the culture of the native plains tribes. The tribes had remained, had been relatively independent in the face of American westward expansion of Manifest Destiny because they had an ample supply of bison for food, fuel, and clothing. After the bison were slaughtered, these independent cultures, these Native American cultures, were weakened and then acquiesced to signing various treaties that limited them to depauperate reservations. In case you just tuned in, you're listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM in Chico and worldwide at kzfr.org. We are talking about the bison populations in Yellowstone and the bison cull. So, yeah, these bison, they are managed, a managed species like so many of our endangered and threatened species are. Biologists have determined what the, quote, carrying capacity is of Yellowstone for these bison. And it's actually based on two parameters. One, the carrying capacity of the park itself. But two, it's also managed by the what the farmers and ranchers in the area will withstand. The bison need summer and winter grazing areas to survive. So the number that they came out was about 4,500. And when I was doing some research, I understood that the target cull number for 2016, for this year, was 500 bison. And they just take 500. They call it harvesting randomly. So they don't care if they're young, old, male, female, pregnant, or not pregnant. They are just rounded up. And then they are slaughtered, and the meat is actually given or sold to, I wasn't quite clear, to Native American tribes. So it's not sold on the market like the bison meat you can get, bison jerky you can get at like S&S or something.
Which is what I assumed as I was learning about this for tonight's show.
Yeah. So it's very similar to, for instance, we have our hatchery, the salmon hatchery at the Oroville Dam, and when they collect the pregnant salmon and the male salmon for the sperm during the salmon runs, those salmon are also kept for food and given away. So these wild animals, they look like a non-vegan issue, right? In terms of, if you look at veganism in terms of what's on our plate. But in fact, these issues that are involved with bison, these wild bison, are exacerbated. They're made worse because we have a meat-eating culture, because it's the cattle ranchers that are the primary pressure point for these animals and their migration.
So, Jeannie, I mean, living here in Chico, you know, we have this amazing Bidwell Park with tons of wildlife. We might not have a bison there, but I mean, I've been walking through the park and I've come across an injured bird, and I don't know what to do. So what advice do you have for somebody who does come in contact with wildlife that seems like it might need some help, but we're not sure?
So yeah, that's a really good point. So let's take like the injured calf, but only for Chico, since we don't have any bison. What we have are small mammals and lots of birds. So we have a great group in town. It's called the Bidwell Wildlife Rehab. And they do not have a facility, but they have a hotline. So I'm going to read off this number now. I want you all to write it down and program your phones into it. It's for the Bidwell Wildlife Rehabilitation Center. The number is 530-343-9004. I'm going to say it again because I think it's important that you get this programmed into your cell phone. 530-343-9004. So, if you're walking in the park and you see a bird that is injured, or a snake, or just any kind of critter that's injured, you call that hotline, and listen to the instructions, and they will tell you what to do. They'll put you in touch. You'll get in touch with the network of volunteers in Chico that will help guide you with how to handle and care for that animal. Typically, you don't feed the animal, put the animal in a box with ventilation holes and just cover it and then wait until you get instructions. And you may be asked to bring it to a local vet as a drop-off point or directly to a rehabber. So in general, you want to like assess the situation and first determine whether you need to intervene or not. And around this time of year, I'm an amateur birder. We have a lot of what are called fledglings, and these are birds that are too big for the nest. They've outgrown the nest. They're, like, consider them teenagers. They're not great flyers yet, so they may look stranded on the ground. But you can bet that their parents are watching them and are aware of where they are. So that may not be an animal that needs to be rescued, because if you try to put that bird back up in its nest, it's just going to flutter back out and be vulnerable. So that's just my two cents on birds. Let's see, what else? Yeah, I think that's about it for wildlife. If you have jackrabbits. If you see a baby jackrabbit, please leave it alone. These guys, unless it's been hit by a car and is obviously like bleeding or injured, or you've seen a cat attack it or something, leave the baby jackrabbits alone, because they are not. First of all, they are very difficult to hold in captivity. So just picking them up to put them in a box to keep them safe is very stressful for them. Oh. And their moms know where they are, and their habit is just to stay in place and wait for mom to come back so they can nurse. So just if you see a baby jackrabbit, leave it alone.
I appreciate that, because I might actually be someone to be like, oh my gosh, it's so cute.
Yeah, and it's all by itself, but no, it's really just fine. It's the way they have evolved, so mom can go off and graze and get enough nutrition to have to nurse and raise up that baby. So, moving on, our next story is about racing. Two racehorses died on Saturday at Pimlico Racetrack in Baltimore, Maryland, in races preceding the Preakness Stakes, which is the second jewel of the Triple Crown, which is a high stakes thoroughbred racing sequence. So 9-year-old gelding thoroughbred homeboy Chris collapsed and died after he won the first race of the day on the day of the Preakness, just while walking back to his barn 100 yards from the track. Homeboy Chris had run 62 races and won 13, and he had even raced in the 2010 Kentucky Derby as a 2-year-old. The Derby and the Preakness are races for basically baby horses, 2-year-olds. A mature horse is about 4, so it'd be like, I don't know, a 10-year-old running a marathon is the equivalent athletic feat. The other horse who died was Premedia, a 4-year-old filly, which is a female horse, who fractured her leg in the 4th race before the Preakness. She was euthanized on the track because horses' leg fractures are catastrophic for these animals. They don't recover from them. The jockey, Daniel Centeno, broke his collarbone in the fall and was okay. Premedia had already run 4 races and won 2, and I believe she was owned by the same people who owned Barbaro.
Barbaro, yes. I just read that online today, and I was just, that's so heartbreaking. I don't know how people can continue to watch that happen to their animals.
The horse racing industry is very problematic. Back in 2012, the New York Times did an in-depth article on horse racing and found that 24 horses die each week in the United States on average. And there's this database called the Equine Injury Database for the industry that shows that over 4,600 thoroughbreds died in racetrack-related incidents from 2009 to 2015, which is the equivalent of 1.87 deaths for every 1,000 starts nationwide. And this number does not even count non-fatal injuries like lameness that may happen. So, yeah.
You know, I was doing a little research for the story, too, today, and I came across a little news clip, and they were interviewing people and getting their reactions to what they had seen with the horses being euthanized. And can I read a couple of the quotes?
Yeah, let's go ahead and hear what the industry says about it.
Yeah, I was just floored, and it's a really good reminder of what, as animal activists, we're kind of up against the mentality that's out there. One woman said, it's a fact of life. When you're dealing with animals, they're going to get hurt. And she said, well, and at least it worked out. I mean, they lost a horse, but at least it worked out.
Oh, so the individual doesn't matter as long as the culture and the sport goes on.
No. Another gentleman said, well, I hate to put it this way, but it's the cost of doing business. And he said, and then he went on to say, at least I can say that, though, because, you know, I'm not a horse.
That is a rare moment of insight on the part of, was that from a fan, you said, or from a trainer?
You know what? I don't think okay. It clarified. There was someone in there who said, as, you know, horse owners, I remember him speaking, but this gentleman didn't say what his relation was, if he was just a spectator.
Well,
but, it was just pretty heartbreaking to listen to.
Yeah, it just takes my breath away that these beautiful animals are they give so much of themselves in this sport, and the owners and trainers, the whole system puts them at risk by doping them, giving them pain meds so that they can't hold back. You know, they're forced to give their all and more, not to mention the whipping that goes on by the jockey when they're on the track. So, yeah, I just wanted to point out, you know, these animals, they're very expensive to breed and raise and maintain. But once their utility in the system, once they start losing money, they are exited from that system really rapidly. And then you find them in all sorts of dire situations. I'll just mention one that I know about, and that's local to us. Safe Haven Rescue, which is north of us in Cottonwood, California, rescued a great granddaughter of Secretariat, who was a very famous thoroughbred, who set record paces for his races. He was the last winner, I believe, of the Triple Crown. Her name was Accessorized, and she had raced 9 times at Golden Gate Fields locally in the Bay Area and earned only $2,700. So she wasn't a big winner. In her career, over her whole career, she raced about every 10 days. And after she was retired, quote, retired, Animal Control in the Bay Area found her as part of an abuse case. She was emaciated. I saw the pictures of her online. She was about 300 pounds underweight. And then she ended up at Safe Haven, where she still is, where they were able to recover her. It's very tricky business to recover an animal. They have very specialized digestions, horses do. So it's very difficult to recover an animal in that condition and make them whole. But she did okay.
Wow.
So this is a sport that if you participate in it, either as a bettor or a trainer or a jockey or a warm-up rider, you have to think carefully what your role is in these for these animals, and I would dare say that if you really thought about the individuals, you would not participate in it. Okay, let's move on to something more cheerful. How about
lighten
that
it up a little bit?
Yeah, today we have a question about how to handle a social situation, which actually comes from my co-host's online column called Dear Toby, which is online over at the World of Vegan website. Learning to be vegan in a non-vegan world requires some tact and skill, and so Toby gives us that skill.
Here's
what the situation was. Dear Toby, I am raising compassionate vegan kids. My young daughter was recently invited to a sleepover where they would be serving pizzas and ice cream. In an effort to be an easy guest, my daughter brought her own vegan pizza and ice cream. When I picked her up the next morning, the vegan food was still packed up and uneaten. My poor daughter didn't have the words to explain to her friend's mom why she preferred her own food. So she didn't say anything. She simply didn't eat. When I picked up when I asked the party's hostess about it, the mom replied, "I'm sorry, but we had plenty of food for everyone, so we didn't need extra." Our daughters are very good friends, and I don't want to make the relationship uncomfortable. Dear Toby, what can I say to educate this other parent? So what did you tell her?
Well, it was interesting because this was actually my first question that I was given for this column. And it was a good lesson for me at working with kind of minimal information. The question didn't address any pre-party conversations that theoretically the parents would have had, which would have been my first line of advice. But since the question asked for post-party advice, I had to address it that way. I came at it assuming the best that this mom just accidentally overlooked that request. You know, if I had a house full of kids, I probably wouldn't be able to remember anything either.
Sure.
And that it wasn't an intentional or passive-aggressive kind of thing. One thing that I want to try to do with this column is help educate people that veganism isn't a diet or an allergy. It's a belief system, and it might not hurt our bodies necessarily. Well, you know, long term, of course, but it hurts our souls. So what I have found is a really good way to disarm people when having these conversations is sitting down over great food. I think food advocacy is amazing. I use it all the time. So I recommended that she make a date with the hostess and bring over something yummy. And I actually suggested Chloe Coscarelli's chocolate chip banana cake because...
Oh, that'll convert anybody.
Oh, my gosh. Absolutely. To say thank you for, you know, being brave to take on this sleepover to begin with. But also, you know, to let the mom know that she and her daughter both appreciate the daughter's friendship. And I said, you know, there's no need to break out your cell phone loaded with all this undercover graphic footage to try to explain things. I think it's easy enough to explain that her family believes animals are here with us and not for us, and that they deserve to enjoy life the same way that we do. And further explain, you know, what her family chooses to eat matters because she doesn't want to hurt anyone. I think that's a really simple and clear statement.
I've heard parents advise our kids just to say, well, we don't eat meat because we don't want to hurt animals.
We don't want to hurt anybody. Yeah. And that's enough of a statement, I think, to kind of plant a seed. And I ended my post back to this person by saying, you know, I bet later when she's, you know, continuing to munch on that chocolate chip banana cake, she's going to wonder, you know, but wait, why do we want to hurt anyone? And then just kind of leave it at that. All you can do is plant a seed and watch it grow.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thanks a lot, dear Toby.
Thanks, Jeannie.
So next, we are running short on time.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, but there's so much to talk about.
I know. But just short and sweet, your pick of the week?
Anything, since I just mentioned, by Chloe Coscarelli. She was my first vegan influence when she won Cupcake Wars. She was the first vegan chef to win a competition like that. The recipe that she won with was ginger nutmeg cupcakes with vanilla buttercream frosting and a date caramel drizzle, which you can find online at chefchloe.com.
You can have vegan frosting?
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
And it's, I'm set.
Oh, my gosh. I know, because it's a food group to me. So, yeah, that's non-negotiable. Yummy's non-negotiable.
That's my rule of thumb, too. And it's our rule of thumb at the Chico Vegan Potluck, which is coming up this Saturday. So I just want to give a shout out for
that.
Will
there be frosting?
Yes. Okay. There's always something that has frosting
nice.
On it. Okay, we're about at the end of our time today. As always, I've really enjoyed the time we get to share here because I don't get to see you out in the world very much in real life.
I know.
So thank you so much for filling in.
Thank you for having me.
And we have one last bit of business to take care of. And that is the Animal Rights Thought of the Week, which is from Joan Jett, the amazing rock star, vegan, in case you didn't know it, and animal rights activist, who said, 20 years ago, I thought, what's the difference between eating a bloody steak and killing my dog, splitting him open, and roasting him? What's the difference indeed, eh? Think about it. Non-Human Radio is made... Oops, no, that's your line.
I thought we were going to music. Non-Human Radio is made possible through the generous contributions of KZFR listeners like you. And thanks, as always, to our engineer, Sue Hildebrand.
This has been Non-Human Radio, a production of KZFR 90.1 FM Chico. The views and opinions expressed on this broadcast are those of the hosts and do not reflect the opinions of KZFR, the board, or its staff. Our theme music is Ready to Fall by vegan activist rockers Rise Against. If you missed any portion of this show or want to listen again or have your friends and family listen, visit us online at nonhumanradio.com. Stay tuned for The Real Issue with Sue Hildebrand coming up next. And if you haven't checked it out, go support Sue's Kickstarter for One Nation Under the Gun. a documentary that examines the gun debate in America and uncovers the myths and misconceptions on this most polarized of issues. The Kickstarter ends in 9 days, so please give what you can. Thanks a lot, and until next